Three ego states: parent, adult, and child. People often follow certain recurring behavioral patterns. The author observed these patterns in thousands of patients and found that we act from one of three ego states: parent, child, and adult. These states consist of feelings, thoughts, and behaviors developed throughout life. Which ego state you're in depends on your past and the present moment. For example, as children, we imitate our caregivers, forming the parent ego state. If your mom got angry and shouted when you did something wrong, you might unconsciously adopt this behavior and raise your voice when your child misbehaves. The parent state isn't always negative. It's just an unconscious imitation of your parents. The adult ego state is the source of rational thinking. It develops as we learn to reflect on our experiences during childhood, allowing us to make decisions based on the present moment. This state processes information and solves problems logically. For example, it emerges when you ask someone to stop crunching popcorn in the cinema, or when you analyze a broken engine to see what needs to be fixed. The child ego state is our natural, spontaneous way of being, the origin of our emotions, creativity, and intimacy. Over time, this state can get buried beneath the parent and adult states. However, it's possible to free the child and return to its spontaneity. We often act from the child state during sex, an activity that isn't taught by parents or consciously learned. Predictable ego interactions. People have ego states, and knowing about them helps understand the games people play. Whenever you talk to someone, you come from one of your ego states. For example, you might be in your parent state, while the other person is in their child state, or both of you might be in the adult state. This is clear when you're scolding your partner for not doing the dishes, parent-child, or planning a trip with a friend, adult-adult. In these cases, the ego state and goal are obvious. However, sometimes it seems like you're acting from one ego state, but you're actually in another. And the apparent goal might not be the real goal at all. Consider a man flirting with a woman. At the end of the evening, he says he'd like to show her his record collection. She replies that she loves records. Even though it sounds like two adults having an innocent conversation, it's actually two children enjoying the spontaneity of flirting. The goal of perusing the collection of records is really veiling the real aim, sexual intercourse. In this case, the man and woman both know what game they are playing. But it's not always like that. Many games are played unconsciously, with neither player knowing what is being played, nor why they're playing it. That's why it's only by understanding the games people play that you can free yourself from the ones that are holding you back. Read on to find out more about the games you play. Lifetime lasting games exist. When you hear the word game, you might think of something brief like a soccer match or a round of Call of Duty. But some games can last much longer and be deadly serious. Consider the game of alcoholic. Alcoholic behavior is actually a complex game with hidden motives and specific goals. When an alcoholic asks for help, it may seem like they are acting as a rational adult. However, they are often challenging others, like their children or partner, to try and stop them from drinking. This behavior is like a rebellious child. While others appear to reason with the alcoholic as adults, they are actually playing the role of the parent scolding the child. The alcoholic then achieves their true goal, provoking anger from others, which fuels their self-pity and self-hatred, leading to more drinking. Another lifelong game people play is, "Now I've got you, you son of a bitch." The main character's anger issues. The main character in this game often has a history of bottled up anger that's ready to explode. To satisfy his need to vent, he seeks out any small injustice and reacts strongly. For instance, if a plumber accidentally overcharges him, he acts furious but is secretly pleased. This situation gives him an excuse to release his anger, and he will happily yell at the plumber for hours about the scandalous mistake. On the other hand, the plumber might be stuck in his own game, behaving like a naughty child who always gets caught. This behavior supports his narrative of victimhood, which he believes is the reason for his unhappiness. Spouses often play games. Marriages can strain even the strongest bonds, especially after the initial excitement fades. Partners must constantly compromise while trying to meet their conflicting needs, which often leads to playing games. One game is called courtroom. In this scenario, a couple visits a therapist to work on their relationship, but it's not what it seems. One partner acts like a child, complaining about the other. The therapist takes on the parent role, judging the partner's behavior as unacceptable. This setup lets the therapist feel morally superior while the child partner gets their complaints validated. Another common game is called Frigid Wife. In this game, the woman teases her husband sexually but rejects his advances. For instance, she might dress provocatively, but then accuse him of being obsessed with sex when he responds. In this scenario, the wife initiates a sexual advance but plays the role of a parent, saying, "You can kiss me if you want." The husband, responding like a child, eagerly says, "Yes, please." However, the wife, still in the parent role, counters with, "That's all you want, isn't it?" This interaction reinforces the wife's belief that men are obsessed with sex, while the husband ends up having no sex with her. The twist is that some men don't even want sexual intimacy, which is why they choose to play the role of the frigid wife. Social gatherings involve games. Some party games, like charades or catchphrases, are harmless and fun. However, others can be sneaky and manipulative. Take Schlemiel, for example, a game where someone pretends to mess up at a party, like spilling wine or clogging the toilet. It seems like the Schlemiel is just apologizing, and the host is graciously accepting it. But in reality, Schlemiel is trying to control the host by making them act with self-control and forgiveness. This allows the Schlemiel to keep being irresponsible, knowing the host will have to forgive them every time. Another example of a party game is, "Why don't you?" "Yes, but..." The player begins by sharing a problem with a group, like choosing a car to buy. The group offers various suggestions. "This model is great for long trips," "A new car is worth the extra cost," and so on. However, these suggestions don't actually help because the player always finds a reason to reject each one. At first, it seems like the main character and the group are discussing the issue as adults, aiming for a practical solution. But in reality, the group is taking on a parent role, trying to assist a child who responds with, "No matter what you do, you can't help me." This lets the player stay in the position of a child facing an unsolvable problem. Sexual relationships can involve games. The bedroom can be a place for fun and games, but it also hosts complex psychological games unrelated to sex or enjoyment. One example is Repo, where sex is used for revenge. In Repo, the main character engages in a sexual act and then accuses their partner of assault. It seems like an adult interaction. The accuser demands compensation while the partner apologizes. However, it's really a child's game. The partner secretly enjoys being seen as sexually desirable, and the accuser reinforces their negative views about sex. Essentially, this game is about guilt. By blaming the partner for the sexual act, the accuser avoids feeling guilty about their own sexual desires. Another example of a sexual game is Uproar. In Uproar, players try to handle uncomfortable sexual tension by starting a fight. For example, if a father and his teenage daughter feel unwanted sexual attraction, especially in a home with a frigid wife, one player might start an argument. This argument quickly turns into a quarrel, and eventually one player leaves the room, slamming the door. This outcome is what the game aims for. By ending up in separate rooms, players show they are not sleeping together. Rule breakers often play games. Hollywood loves movies about con men, thieves, and drug dealers, showing our fascination with criminals. But what drives people to these risky lives? One reason is the game, Cops and Robbers. In Cops and Robbers, criminals seem like they're adults seeking a shortcut to luxury. However, their real motive is to get caught. They want to be captured because it confirms their self-view as losers. This is why some criminals leave clues or act arrogantly, to help the police catch them. After being sentenced and jailed, they might start a new game, Want Out. In Want Out, prisoners pretend they want to escape but actually want to stay longer. They know escaping is nearly impossible and that getting caught will only extend their sentence. They take this risk because, while they seem to crave freedom, they actually prefer the safety of prison over the unpredictability of the outside world. Psychotherapy includes many games. After learning about these games, you might think everyone needs some psychotherapy. However, psychotherapy also has its odd games. Take the game of indigence, where the therapist and client work together to keep everything the same. The client might bring up an issue like being unemployed. They discuss it as if they are two adults seeking a rational solution, but neither actually wants things to change. Why? Both the therapist and the client benefit from maintaining the current situation. The therapist gets to keep a client and play the caring parent, while the client stays in the role of the incompetent child, avoiding challenging changes like entering the workforce. Therapists also engage in the game called, I'm only trying to help you. In this game, the therapist's ego is at stake. When a patient presents a problem, the therapist offers a solution that they know won't work. When the patient returns, saying the solution failed, the therapist secretly judges the patient as incompetent. This lets the therapist maintain their self-image as a competent parent surrounded by incompetent children. We've seen how our behavior is influenced by these games, but what happens when we stop playing them? Less gaming, closer bonds. Our exploration of human psychology shows that games can make life tough. So, why do we keep playing them? First, we don't actively choose to start playing games. They develop slowly over time, often being invented long before we're born. As we grow up, we're taught to play them without even realizing it. Each culture and family has its own games, leading to a wide variety of strange behaviors. Second, games serve a key role. They let people interact without becoming intimate. Many people are uncomfortable showing their true selves. By playing games, they can stick to familiar routines and hide behind roles, avoiding real closeness. This helps them socialize without being vulnerable. However, real human connection requires vulnerability and intimacy. To truly connect, we need to give up our games. How do we do this? We must first learn about the various games people play by understanding our own ego states and observing our interactions. Next, we need to disrupt these games by dropping our masks, allowing ourselves to be vulnerable, and seeing through others' masks. It won't be easy, but what's the alternative? Key points. 1. People operate from three ego states, parent, adult, and child, shaped by past experiences. 2. The parent ego state imitates caregiver's behaviors. It can be positive or negative. 3. The adult ego state engages in logical thinking and problem solving based on current reality. 4. The child's ego state represents spontaneous emotions and creativity, often hidden under other states. 5. People play psychological games based on ego states, sometimes unconsciously. 6. Some behaviors, like alcoholism, involve complex, long-term games with hidden motives. 7. To build genuine connections, one must recognize and disrupt these games by developing vulnerability.